I am going to turn the program over to Angel because we have the amazing, incredible David Foreman on the line, a.k.a. Little Isidore. So, Barbara?
All right, we're moving seeds. All of you that are regulars here on Remember Then Radio understand that. I want to start out by giving a shout out and a thank you to Pam Nardella, because I don't know, I didn't ask David because we haven't spoken ahead of time because I wanted it to be a fresh interview and not have everything studied and practiced, but I'm sure she had something to do with this. Am I correct, David?
Well, she told me that you guys had raised the question as to whether we could do this or not.
Well, we are so honored, and I just want to start by saying I'm very humbled to have the opportunity to welcome an icon and a legend such as Little Isidore here to the Remember Then Radio family. I mean, I'm really excited, and, you know, life isn't a dress rehearsal, and this is my one and only opportunity, so David, let's have a blast.
No problem, and geez, you know, I mean, that's very sweet of you to say, but, you know, I mean, I just kind of do what I do.
Well,
happy that you like our work. That's what I'm trying to say.
You were very blessed, very blessed. I'm telling you, to have the talent that you have, and Steve had announced that you were running a little late because you were with family. Your kids were there, and
that's right. Yeah,
you're so blessed that my kids rarely talk to me. So the fact that your kids are there and you're having breaking bread and having dinner together is so beautiful.
Yeah, no, it's so great when they're here. You know, the house just comes alive, as you can imagine. You know,
yes,
it's fantastic. It reminds me of when we used to go visiting. My mother had three sisters.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be in, like, we'd be playing in some room or another, and through the doorways, I could hear them all sitting around the table laughing together. My mom and her sisters, and I just thought this is the greatest thing I ever heard. And now I have it on the other side, you know, where my kids, my daughters, and my son, are downstairs playing hearts or dominoes or singing.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
they do like.
There is nothing like the memories of when your childhood and making memories together as a family. I'm telling you, it's so great. Okay, let's start out with. Do I say, David? Can you tell us a little bit? Introduce us to Little Isidore, or should I say Little Isidore? Can you introduce us and tell us about David?
I guess it's probably more appropriate these days to just call me David.
Okay.
I can tell you kind of how Little Isidore came about.
Oh, we want to hear every detail. Every detail.
You know, so I had, I had a kind of another career in music for a long time. You know, I kind of got into the record business kind of in the late 60s, early 70s. And, you know, I had a little notoriety as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And it came and it went, and, you know, records got made and they didn't get released. You know, it's a story you've heard a billion times.
A billion. Not songs that were unreleased. So many.
Yeah, sure. And I kind of took it in stride. The actual fame part of that kind of it weirded me out.
Really?
You know, I didn't like that. I liked having the acceptance from the writers, and, you know, and I liked that people enjoyed my work,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I didn't like the kind of, you know, it was a little creepy.
Oh, geez, I'd love it. I would not find it creepy. I'd love to be famous.
I'm not so sure you would, but anyway... believe me, it went away fast enough.
Everything does. Nothing ever lasts.
And I got into, somebody gave me a call, saying, we heard that you can, that you're like a quick study. Would you come and sing this commercial for Fifth Avenue Candy Bars?
That's what started at Fifth Avenue Candy Bars?
In the jingle business, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought, really? You want me to sing a commercial? I mean, you know, it never even occurred to me that people made commercials, that actual human beings, you know, I never gave it a thought.
Wait a minute, 2 and a Half Men, didn't he do the jingles? That's how he made all that money to live in California.
Yeah, but this is way before that.
That's true, so you wouldn't have known about Charlie.
No, this is way before. This was 1976, 77, you know, mm-hmm. 8. That's when I kind of broke into that. Anyway, it turned out that it was lucrative, you know.
Right.
And I had no idea. So anyway, I did that for a while. And I wrote some songs in between. And, you know, they were okay. But I was writing jingles and singing them. And, you know, I was able to, you know, pay the
bills,
rent,
right.
And buy groceries. And, you know, it was kind of fun, you know. Get dressed up every day, go to the studio, hang out, you know, have some laughs, do some singing. It was great. Anyway, one thing led to another, and oh, I know what. In like around 1989 or 1990, my friend Aaron Neville.
Oh wow, your friend Aaron Neville. I'd love to say that.
He had a smash hit with Linda Ronstadt.
Uh-huh.
I don't know much, you know.
Yeah.
And I knew how difficult his career was between Tell It Like It Is and That Time, and it just brought tears to my eyes. Uh-huh. That the guy was able to, you know, finally break through on a level that was meaningful, you know, and it started me thinking, geez, you know, I wonder what would have happened if I hadn't just kind of like abandoned the idea of making records.
Mm-hmm.
And what if I really put my mind to it? You know, I had some decent songs. And so I kind of determined that I would make, you know, some overtures into the record business again. And this was around 1990. And so I had this guy that I knew who was kind of managing me in a certain way, in a very ineffective,
right.
ineffective way.
There's plenty of them out there.
There are. But he said he had a friend who was also a great musician, and would I be interested in meeting the guy? And I said, yeah, okay. You know, I wasn't expecting very much. Turns out it was Johnny Gale.
Oh, wow. Neil Posner.
We hit it off immediately. You know, and this is now around 1992, something like that. And
he never ages.
Hanging out.
You ever notice he always looks young?
Well, you know, there are tricks to that.
Okay. Well, he needs to call me with some of those tricks.
So anyway, I had this apartment on 78th Street and 2nd Avenue at the time, and we were up there hanging out, and he says, you know, and I had this act that I was doing, all original material, you know, singer, songwriterly stuff, but a big band, and he came and played guitar on the second gig at the Bottom Line.
Oh, wow. I love the band part of it all. I think, you know, that's something you don't see anymore that I love.
Yeah, this was good. This was quite good. Anyway, we were chatting, and I said, you know, you want to do something? And he says, well, I really kind of have a favorite kind of music. It's, you know, they call it doo-wop. And I said, no kidding. Really? Seriously, man? I love that.
Perfect.
I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that, but we have to, you know, we need some ground rules, and the ground rules were very simple. We're not doing it for money. We're doing it for a smile, and it has to be musically excellent, which is, you don't have to tell that to Johnny Gale.
Oh, you want to hear something funny? Everyone I spoke to about you, you know, because I wanted to do a little backstory research, everybody said, oh, the man's a perfectionist.
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
No point in doing it. You know, I mean,
I love that.
If it's a mess, you
correct.
Know, nothing is worse than that, making a mess.
I agree.
And, you know, and it's worth taking a few minutes in rehearsal to get it right, to voice the, you know, put the right people on the right voices, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, to really listen how those guys made those records. Like Johnny always says, you know, it's none of those records were hit records by accident.
Correct.
You know, there were gray hairs making those records. There might have been kids singing them, but the guys who knew how to make records were already gray hairs. So anyway, around about middle of 1993, we started going out. We put a band together. Yeah, he knew some guys, and I knew some guys, and it turned out to be quite an ensemble. And we started playing at this place. I don't even remember the name of it. It was on Canal Street and West Broadway.
Wow.
And it was a club. You know, they had, I don't know, you know, they would have five or six acts every night.
There were so many clubs back then.
Yeah, yeah, you know. So and so we got a slot. I guess we did it once a week. I had this, you know, this character I'd been thinking about, you know, this little Isidore thing, which is actually one of the character names in Damon Runyon's short stories.
Oh, okay.
And I always liked it because he was a guy from Brooklyn, you know, and he would...
You Brooklyn guys always stick together. I'm telling you, there's yep. such pride in coming from Brooklyn.
There is quite a bit. Anyway, that's how it started, you know. Then Seth Glassman, who went by the name of Junior Mintz, our bass player, was a tremendous musician.
That's funny, Junior Mintz.
He suggested that we record, you know, some of the tunes, and we had some original songs, but mostly we were doing, like, you know, Desiree. And,
covers, yeah. Which, incredible covers, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, they're great. I mean, it's not by accident.
Let me tell you, I dislike cover songs. I don't like to play them. I rarely play them. Everyone you do is the aces. Amazing.
Well, thank you. You know, most of the time, it's not worth covering those records. Those records were too good.
Right. But you picked the right songs. It's like Stevie Dunham. He's in the chat room right now. He's another one that I love the songs that he does that are covers.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fantastic. Okay. So anyway, we started, we made this record, No One Gets Hurt. It came out in the fall of 1994, and there was a lot of noise about it between Ronnie and the UGHA people, with whom Johnny had a, you know, like a long history.
Nothing like UGHA. That was so special.
It was, no, fantastic. It was so exciting.
Trevo, so, my gosh, the shows there blow your mind.
Well, yeah, I remember. I did quite a few of them. And it was, in fact, the first really big one that we did was in Trevo.
Mm-hmm.
At the Buck Hotel.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember it well.
So that's kind of the inception of all this, you know. I had a notion that we were doing well, but I had no idea how popular we actually were. No idea.
Oh, my gosh. I need to tell you, you are so out there. I mean, it's hysterical. I want to know who you were when you were a child. What, you know, tell me about your parents. Tell me what gave you the confidence and the courage to be little Isidore, because little Isidore is very out there.
Well, here's, you see, in order to muster up the confidence and courage, I had to be a different character.
Uh-huh. Okay, because David couldn't do it.
Going out as myself, I was kind of self-conscious, you know. I mean, I could sing, and I could write a song, but there's a difference between that and being kind of like a compelling performer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of more than a convenience to be this other. It was a necessity to create a character that I wouldn't be self-conscious about. And plus, it gave me an opportunity to be a Catholic, because you know, little Isidore's a Catholic.
I know, not like a Jewish guy. That was one of your fantasies, huh?
Well, it wasn't exactly, but the proof is really, I mean, you know, like how many rock and roll singers, rock and roll I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like Neil Diamond guys, you know, not that, but rock and roll, how many Jewish guys are there? Not very many.
Oh, I would disagree with you on there. There's a lot of Jewish guys.
Who?
Neil Sedaka is a Jewish guy.
He's not a rock and roll singer. He's a pop singer.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about, you know, like Len Barry is one.
Yeah, that's right. He's a Philly guy.
I mean, he's got a tough thing, you know. It's like, you know, Neil Sedaka, whatever you think of the guy, and I like him. I mean, you know, he's a great songwriter. There's no toughness there, none.
Oh, God, no. No toughness. You're right. You're right.
The appealing aspect of it to me is, anyway, I mean, I say it half kidding, but really, it set me free to have this other character.
Well, I'll tell you what. I want to party with Little Isidore. I have always wanted to party. I mean, you guys really know how to rock the room. And, you know, we're in social distancing right now. And so let's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, from today on, I'm going to be able to say I partied with Little Isidore. Because, yes. You know, it's virtual.
That's
so, you know, if anybody asks you, they call me Doo-Wop Angel. I'm Barbara Cornegie. You and I have partied.
I recognized your name immediately.
I love it.
Did I have you in my?
We've been friends for. I was very good friends with Wayne Smith.
Yes, there
and
we are.
That's probably where you know me from.
Yeah, sure. Yes. You know, and I loved performing those rock and roll songs.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as I loved rock and roll, I didn't really write it.
Question, you know? When were you I noticed you were very prolific when it came to all of the advertisements and all the people that you worked for. I mean, when did you do all of that? And can you name some of the companies that you did jingles for?
Oh, sure. I started that. That was around 1976, 77. I had an album out on Arista, and that kind of got me a little noticed. And they, you know, that's when I started getting calls to come do vocals.
Mm-hmm.
But gradually, I had a lot of friends, musician friends and songwriter friends in the business, and they knew that I could write also. So somebody asked me to write a song, a jingle for Ponderosa Steakhouses. you remember those?
I do. I ate plenty there.
I wrote this jingle for Ponderosa, and everything was competitive. You know, you didn't get any gifts in that business. You had your thing was competing against, like, say, five other guys and five other companies. You know, so you won. You could figure on winning 20% of your submissions.
Okay.
So I won the Ponderosa thing, then I started writing for a friend of mine, you know, he would, you know, put me on Burger King spots and McDonald's spots and Ford.
Wow.
And, I mean, he was just, you know, and I was, you know, I was pretty lucky. I won my share, and I got to sing on all this stuff.
Weren't you on a spot for the Super Bowl?
I did a Super Bowl spot. It was with the Muppets.
Get out of here.
Toyota.
Toyota. Do you remember it?
No.
That's a shock. No. I mean, that's really a big deal.
What, having a Super Bowl spot?
Yeah. You know how much they earn?
I know how much they cost. They cost a lot of money.
A lot of money, yeah. I hope they paid you well.
Well, it doesn't change. You know, you make your money basically you work for scale, you know. You know, there's a schedule of payments, you know, and this is through the Screen Actors or AFTRA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be in the union.
Well, listen, I'd like to play a song because everybody is going through all the songs they love by you. And and then we'll do some more chatting. I'm loving every minute of this.
What do you want to play?
Can we do start out with What Did She Say? I love that.
Oh, come on. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about your feelings for What Did She Say? And you remember what you remember about your first time?
I remember we were in my apartment, me and Johnny, and we were kind of like, well, you know, like, what do you feel like? It was like Marty, you know, like that Ernest Borgnine movie.
Yes.
You know, like, what do you feel like doing? I don't know. What do you feel like? I don't know. What do you feel like doing? I said, let's write something. Generally, I was like a ballad guy. I would gravitate toward the, like, Go and, Real Good Reason, I Pray For You, that kind of material. That's where, you know, I loved living in that soulful kind of ballad thing.
Mm.
This time I was really hopped up on Roy Hamilton and Don't Let Go. You know, it's got that guitar thing that goes ding a 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 And I thought, oh, yeah, so here's a very simple, and it just popped into my head, and it's so simple. It's not even that great, but it's you and me.
It's perfect. Are you kidding me? Everybody loves it. It's that great, honest. It really is. So let's listen to it, and then we'll talk some more.
Sure.
Okay. Here we go. Little Isidore and the Inquisitors, What Did She Say?
Yeah.
Me too. What did she say?
La 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 la.
How did she look? Did she look sad when you told her? Surprised when you told her I cried. What did she say? It's true. that she still loves me too. What did she say?
Okay, David, I'm going to just tell you this so you'll understand how I do the interview. I was diagnosed last year with the early stages of dementia. And if I don't do something immediately, I forget about it. And you and Steve were just discussing soldiers writing songs. And I think that's really important that everybody hear about that.
Oh, okay. Well, the correct name of the company, it's not a company, it's an organization called Songwriting with Soldiers. And it was co-founded by Mary Judd and Darden Smith. And Darden is a Texas songwriter.
Okay.
And Mary is actually from up in my neck of the woods. She's up near Albany, a little farther north than where I am. And so I have a friend and, a dear, dear friend named Stuart Lerman, and he's a producer, a record producer, and he knew Darden Smith and recommended me to Darden. What they do is they sit down with vets, and active duty guys also, but generally people who are having some kind of issue where they feel like it might do some good to try this process with professional songwriters.
Wow, I think that's incredible. What a great idea to work through what they're feeling.
Exactly. So I sit down and fundamentally, the conversation goes like this. What brings you here, you know? And the guy will either tell you or he won't. No, but generally they're there, and they'll tell you. They will tell you, sometimes there are secrets that they keep about things they saw, things they might have done,
right,
that are really, really painful.
We all have them.
I don't pry. I don't. Mm-hmm. But what I do is I listen to their language, and when I hear a line that has some resonance or some rhythm or some something that is worthy of 3 minutes of a song, I'll ask them, I'll say, well, you think that we might expound on that? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think that's a good idea?
Certain things just jump out at you.
Exactly. And it always comes from conversation. So it's amazing to me. You know, the weekend, these were weekend retreats, and it's amazing the difference in the relaxation and the sense of camaraderie and expression that happened over the course of the 2 or 3 days. It's just an amazing, and it's not just therapeutic. You know, these guys get to hear their testimony,
mm-hmm,
in music and in songs. It's quite a thing, quite a thing.
You are giving them such a beautiful gift, and they, in return, I'm sure that it's changed your life in many ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely has. It's beautiful. They're actually, 2 or 3 of those songs turned out like pretty damn good.
Oh, my gosh, that's fantastic. Well, everybody in the chat room wants to give you a shout-out, so I'm going to read just a few of the people that are in that just want to send you their love, because everybody's in here writing, oh, he's my very favorite, I have everything he does, I love him. So right now we have Angel, who's me, Bot, Steve, yep, Kojak, Bubba, hi, Bubba, Sharon, Ramon, Alley Boy, who's actually Alex Augustine, Ronnie G, Stevie D, DJ Pete, who, you know, is one of the people that says he has everything you've ever done, Don and Ann, Babyface, Bytor, IMS, Godfather, and Night Train, just to name a few. I mean, and then if you go down, which you're not in, but if you go down and you look at the globe and you look at the dots, that's all the people. There's a lot of people listening to you and a lot of people that love you, and they just wanted you to know that.
That's so beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and okay, this is funny. And like I said, I want to party with you. I've been doing a lot of reading, and on your bio, which is hysterical, the one that starts out with the Little Isidore bio about being born in occupied Tokyo in 46. You are too much. The last line just, I mean, it's, I never know what's coming out of my mouth. The band never knows what's coming out of my mouth. Sometimes I really talk myself up a tree. It should be real fun. And that's what I kept in mind when I planned for the interview today, that we're just going to have a blast, and it's working out that way. I'm loving every minute of this.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you are, and it's true. I mean, I've done some things on stage. I have literally talked myself up a tree. There was a scene, what was it now? Was it in, I think it must have been in a Woody Allen movie. There was a scene where this guy is tearing up, these two guys are trying to outdo each other, you know, like
Gentlemanship
kind of thing. And one guy's tearing up money, you know?
Oh, no.
And I thought, oh, that's a really funny bit. I'm going to try this on stage. So we're in this restaurant in Philadelphia. And on a Thursday night, we had like a regular spot there. And I said to the audience, who's got a $20 bill for Little Isidore? And somebody gives me a $20 bill, and I promptly tore it to shreds and, like, sprinkled it down on the stage. But the problem was I had nothing after that. I hadn't thought it through at all. And
you froze.
I just thought that would be funny, but you know what? It was shocking to people. It was really shocking in a kind of like not a pleasant way.
I can, I would not be tickled pink if I was the one that gave you the 20 you ripped up.
I gave him back a 20.
I would hope so.
But as far as like writing something funny, I hadn't thought it through at all. And talk about talking yourself up a tree. Insane. You know, and the people were so confused. They were really confused. Like, what was that? We had a drummer. It was a new drummer that day, a guy named Michael Braun. And he turned to Johnny. He says, that's a gag, right? I mean, that's not real. And Johnny says, it's real.
This is funny because one of my questions for you is, did you ever find yourself like standing on stage thinking, what the hell am I doing here? Like, this is not going right. This is the wrong, you know, and here you go. You told me already.
Yeah, there's one of those. And there's another one. That's
there is.
Funny, you know, one day, very early on, you know, we were doing that Ron Holden song, Love You So.
Oh, yeah.
And so I said, you know, because Little Isidore loves you so. And that became like a line, you know, like a tagline. Little Isidore loves you so. And I thought, okay, that's good. People loved it. You know, yeah, Little Isidore. We love you, Little Isidore. We love you, Little Leopold. We love you. And when the second album came out, Inquisition of Love, I thought maybe it's time to get a new catchphrase, you know.
Not a good idea, probably.
I know. we're gonna get rid of.
If it works, you don't fix it.
Right. So I decided that it would be really good if the new catchphrase was the line from "Come Back to Queen," to my darling.
Mm-hmm.
The line that says, please don't make something bad happen. I don't know why I thought that would be a good catchphrase.
Not smart, sweetie. Not smart.
So I made this big deal about it. I think it was at Schutz and Park. It would have for a Ronnie I show. Mm-hmm. I kept announcing that I was going to make this announcement. This announcement is coming. It's coming. finally, I got around to it. And halfway through it, I realized that it's a really bad entry. But halfway through it, so I didn't exactly finish the line, you know.
Oh, no.
Okay, so I said, and the new catchphrase is, please don't. It was hilarious for me and Johnny.
That was a once and done after that, I hope.
Anybody, I don't think anybody else thought it was funny, but I think it's hilarious. I don't know what came over me. I thought people would realize that it's an ironic kind of postured, you know.
Well, let's remember something. You're a very, very intelligent man. I can see that you're a musical genius. So not everybody follows the way that you do. You know what I mean? Like really, really smart people like you, you can see the joke, but the rest of the people don't get it.
It's the thing, Angel. And this is part of, I really believe that this is part of why we did so well, is that giving the audience credit for that same intelligence, you know, raising the level of that, you know, not pandering,
right,
is what I'm saying.
Right,
you know?
I get you.
Keeping the level of it high, and they're in on the joke.
Right.
In on it. And that's the part, I think, that's a bit like that was a very strengthening aspect to the whole thing. Is everybody knew that it was a little bit of a put-on, but somehow it was still, like, really musically very excellent. And it was fun, and it was sweet-natured. You know, there was no kind of...
Well, it's always apparent at your shows that you love and respect your audience.
I do.
And it shows.
I wish
it shows
I could
through.
Do it. I can't do that anymore. You know?
I understand. You know, we all get to that point. How about if we listen to Love You So?
Love You So, fantastic. By the way, I had a kind of great conversation with Ron Holden about this right before he passed away.
Oh, that's great that you got. What did he say? Yeah, yeah. Did he love the job that you did?
He loved it, and he said nobody had ever covered that song.
Wow.
And that was a shocker to me because, you know, that was a song that...
It was a great song. You would think there were a lot of covers.
We all loved it, you know. We all loved it. And it was great to talk to him. He was down in San Diego.
What a blessing.
It was. It was tremendous.
All right. Well, let's spin it right now. Here we go. Love You So.
Thank you.
right. DJ Pete has a question for you. He wants to know how you came up with all the names. And can you tell us a little bit about the people and what their names were? And I mean, really, come on. Some of them are just plain hysterical.
No, Johnny Gale had this, his publishing company is called Stompinato Music.
That's so cool. So
he went by the name of Johnny Stompinato, who was a gangster, kind of like more like a bag man for Mickey Cohen in Los Angeles in the 50s. He was Lana Turner's boyfriend, and we think that Lana Turner killed him.
Oh, okay. Lana Turner, huh?
Yeah.
The beauty
queen. No. That's serious. Her daughter, I think, is the one that killed him. And for that reason, she was acquitted because I think Lana Turner killed him because he was, aggressing the daughter.
I got you.
Anyway, so Johnny Stompinato Jr. and I would introduce him as America's sweetheart, the love child of Lana Turner. Johnny Stompinato Jr. People like that, and I thought, okay, everybody deserves a name, So we had Junior Mintz was Seth Glassman, a bass player.
Right.
It was a tremendous bass player, just fantastic. That guy was on every record in the 1970s.
Your drummer blew me away. That's your drummer is amazing.
Well, you're talking about Phil Leone?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. And what a sweet, wonderful guy. So I had a bunch of names for him. Because the one that stuck for me, the best one was Bud Abbott Jr. Because he had a resemblance to the guy, Okay. And I used to make him pencil on a mustache. He didn't want to.
I don't blame him.
Listen, man, I said, look here, we're in business. You got a pencil on a mustache. I'm sorry. You just got to do it. And occasionally on Facebook, I find that picture and I post it, because he looks fantastic. I mean, the guy looks, he looks like, Ronald Coleman.
Right.
So there was him. Then we had a guitarist named Jack Cavari, and it was easy enough to make the leap from Jack Cavari to Jack Ruby Jr.
Right, yes.
And I would tell him, oh, geez, it's drag what happened to your dad.
That rips Mike D'Amore up every time you mention it. He thinks that's hysterical.
Okay, so there was him. We had David Jackson was a piano player, and he was an arranger, super well-known arranger, and I kind of like prevailed upon him to play piano for us. Because we needed a piano player. I would have added a second keyboard player. I would have had an organ player, too.
Oh, yeah. Organ players are great, too.
Then you got to schlep around an organ.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he was Jughead Jones. Jughead Johnson. Then we had, it's hard to remember. I had, it was a guy named Danny Walensky. Who was a saxophone genius. And Danny Walensky wore a patch over one eye. And one day, just kind of like on the spur of the moment, I introduced him as Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, my gosh. That's too funny for words. And everybody loves the sax player. I mean, let's face it. That's the most popular guy, usually.
And so we had a sax player named Sal Giorgiani, and I called him Sal Hepatica. Which was like an old drugstore remedy for, I don't even know what it was for. Back aches? I don't know. Like Carter's Little Liverpool?
Most definitely. For back pain, yes. Remember them well. We're showing our age.
So that's just a few, I mean, and we had personnel go in and out. Guy Valick, who was the second guitarist and a really great second tenor. Oh, and Frenchie.
Yeah, you can't forget Frenchie.
Well, Johnny named him because there was this guy who sang for oh God, who was? It's somebody in your audience knows who Frenchy Concepcion, the original Frenchy Concepcion sang with.
Okay.
Maybe they can. Somebody can. I can't remember the Wrens. No, I don't know. Frenchy Concepcion. Can't remember specifically, but
well, we'll think of it.
Frenchy Concepcion the third.
Don't forget your Kit and Caboodle and Moulton Milton. Oh, and let's not forget your mother, who, by the way, up until maybe 5 years ago, I thought was actually your mother.
That's good.
I'm an idiot.
I'm happy to hear that. You know, a Sonia Rivera. Oh.
I really thought she was your mother.
I'm so happy. You know, like that could work. It's just wonderful. And then the idea that she would sing with me and my friends in the kitchen, that's really kind of rich and beautiful.
I know. I was very disillusioned when I found out it wasn't your mother.
Sorry. I used to say she's so fertile. She had me when she was 6 years old.
Exactly, yes. But you know, you can't tell with women. You don't know what their age is.
I know. The thing was, when I saw her, the first time I saw her was at a private party, and she was singing with the Valentinos.
Oh, great group.
And she had her hair in a ponytail up on top of her head, and big, plastic lens glasses, and smoking Marlboros.
Right.
And I thought, oh, my God, this is the person. And she sounded like Pearl, what's her name, from the Kodaks.
Oh, yeah, Pearl.
Yeah, you know what.
Yeah, we know.
She sounded like that kind of super authentic rock and roll.
Oh, God, is she ever.
And I turned to Johnny Gale and I said, listen, man, that's little Isidore's mother. Look at her. You know, she's got the thing on top of her head. Her hair's pulled back. She's smoking a butt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Back in the day, everybody smoked.
I did, too. It killed me. It killed me twice.
It's McKinnon. McKinnon. Babyface. Yeah, Babyface reminded me.
That was it, you know, and...
You had a lot of people on stage. I remember one of the UGHA ones. There were... You had a big crowd up there.
Yeah, there could have been nine of us up there.
Right. I bet there were nine. Most people don't have that many people up there.
Well, that's why I told, we're not in this for the money. We're in this for, to make wonderful music.
Well, you made wonderful memories for a lot of people, and a lot of people love you.
That's so sweet. You have to have two saxophones in order to do the music correctly.
For me, definitely, because that's my... drum and sax, that's all I need. The drummer and the sax player.
You know, the thing with sax solos, that's all well and good, but the section is really important. You know, I'm not crazy about brass. You know, I don't really like trumpets at all.
Right.
But I like a trombone. But the two saxes were fine. You know,
it was incredible. It was incredible. How about if we hear Harlem Hit Parade?
Oh, I love Harlem Hit Parade.
Yeah, me too.
That's great.
Me too. You did a bang up job on this. So let's play it for the audience.
Very nice.
Here we go.
The blues is solemn. Everybody dancing and hooting and a hollering. Turn it up, darling. Harlem Hit Parade. Get up, baby. Harlem Hit Parade. Drive me crazy. Harlem Hit Parade. There's a line of people waiting out in the rain to see. a Solomon Burke, a dude to swim, to twist, the anyone, the cool, cool jerk. Chicago, the center of the universe, the temple.
The Harlem Hit Parade is over, and I'm telling you, I'm dancing my full head off right now. I hope you're dancing with me. Then virtually, I can not only say I partied with you, but I danced with you.
Awesome.
Yes, I'm insane. We all know that.
Who could ask for more? Yeah.
That's right. That's correct. So tell us a little bit. You have a song from Boardwalk Empire.
I did a couple of things for them. One was a UB Blake song. What was it called? I can't remember the title. And then there was this one thing called So Long Oolong. I did that for them. And this one, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is Tiger Rag. Hold That Tiger?
Mm-hmm. Hold. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and we, you know, this is, you know, the Big Mills Brothers record, you know, and it's crazy fun to sing this bag of music.
The Mills Brothers. You know, boy, that's a good memory, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's fantastic. And Buzz Garland, I knew from years before, had, you know, he was trying to convince me to do that song on stage, on the stage show, and I said, no, it's the wrong thing, you know, but mm-hmm. I remembered that he could do that scat thing, and so I called him. He came up from Philly and put that thing on for this thing.
Yeah, we got Philly and Brooklyn mixed. You can't go wrong when you have Philly and Brooklyn represented, right?
I know. I mean, it's kind of the same place.
Amen. Here we go.
Where's that tiger? Where's that tiger? Where's that tiger? Where's that tiger? There's that tiger. No, 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 no. Hold that tiger.
All right. I was just reprimanded for bouncing ahead. Steve said I'm supposed to ask you a little bit more about Harlem Hit Parade.
Oh, no. I was just going to mention how it got written. You know, a very good friend of ours is Felix Hernandez, who has the Rhythm Review on WBGO in Newark on Saturday mornings. Anyway, he was doing a thing called Harlem Hit Parade, like a segment of his show, and he asked for a theme song. So I said, yeah, that sounds fun. Why don't you give me some notes as to, like, kind of, like, if you have any, like, ideas or thoughts about what, you know, what you might want to literally say. And he gave me some notes, and we made a date to go record this thing. Unfortunately, we hadn't written a song yet. So,
that's great. You can talk about pressure. Is that pressure?
I didn't feel it as such, but when we got in the car to drive to, where are we, in West Orange, New Jersey, the studio was, I wrote the song in the front seat of the car, and Gary Lovett was supposed to sing lead, but his Cadillac wouldn't go in the snow. It was a
super Gary gotta love it. His Cadillac wouldn't go in the snow.
Right.
Okay. That's interesting.
He was skidding all over the place. So Angel came and sang it.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was perfect. Little Leopold.
Angel's incredible. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, only one Angel, really. I loved him. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was a great guy. Super great guy.
You knew a lot of them, didn't you?
Some, yeah. Yeah, nobody's luckier than me.
You've known a lot of wonderful people, and you've worked with a lot of wonderful people. What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Oh, gosh.
Take your time. We have all the time in the world.
Well, I don't want to, you know, dead air is no good. I'm just trying to think on my feet. I would just say, trust your sensibility.
Trust your gut.
Trust your instincts.
Yeah.
If you believe in something, you know, then run with it. You know, you may be proved right. You know.
Can you name some of the people that have impacted your life? People that you met that you had no idea would be special to you one day?
Oh God, that I don't know. I mean, you know, it's like everybody in their way. You know, I mean. You know, you mean like who surprised me? Who turned out to be
great? Yes, people, like, someone you worked with that you didn't think you were going to be impressed by that you were totally impressed by.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Well, geez.
Take your time. I have other questions I can ask.
No, it's, it's just funny because it's not like I have expectations and stuff like that. I wouldn't want to insult somebody by saying, "Oh, I thought this person was going to be a jerk, and he turned out to be a great guy."
Oh, that's true. You're right. You're right. Of course, if they're dead, they
it's like I don't want to go there. You know?
Okay, I understand that. I understand that completely. Tell me about some of the venues. What was your favorite venue to play?
Well, in a way, it was the Bitter End, because it was right there on Bleecker Street, and really, that was the beginning of drawing a following. Shuchun Park was great, of course, Ronnie packed the house. It was always a full house there, you know. I loved playing that. Oh, there's a big, the Paramount Theater in Asbury Park. That was great.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Radio City. Radio City was super fun.
Oh, you can't get better. Come on, Radio City, that's huge.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny. When you're in a show, you know, there's a stage, there's microphones, and there's an audience. It's not that different. I loved, where does the Gita do his shows?
Oh, Jerry Blavitt, yeah. At Kimmel Center?
Kimmel was beautiful.
Oh, the Kimmel Center is amazing. I agree with you there.
Yeah, beautiful.
Now, we live right outside of Margate. His club, that he, Memories in Margate, is only about 2 miles from our house. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you want to come down, you're welcome.
Well, thanks. That's very sweet. I don't travel that well anymore.
No, I understand that completely. Here's the first song I ever heard you do, and I love it.
What's that?
I'm going to play it right now. Little Isidore and the Inquisitors, you're so fine. You rocked this.
Oh, my
gosh. You rocked this. Golden Oldies man who's in the audience wanted to know if we played Blue yet, and it's in the queue right now. So Little Isidore, can you tell us a little something about it?
Do you remember a song called Hey There? It was a big hit for what's her name,
You with the Stars in Your Eyes, that one. Hey There, You with the Stars in Your Eyes,
yeah. So I told Johnny I wanted to do something that, you know, that was kind of like in that world, you know? He surprised me, and the music that he came up with was it was much more sophisticated than that music, but it was awesome, you know. So yeah, you know, and it's got that you know, Angel sings with kind of like a Arthur Prysock vocal, you know,
right?
Billy Eckstein or somebody like that, you know. That's really all I wanted to say. I love it a lot, and I just want to say hey to Sam too. You know, hey Sam.
Yeah, well, you were part of a lot of incredible music, and here's one right now.
No, that's great.
The falling rain, the neon sign, cast shadows in their dark design, that bathe this lonely room of mine in blue. Mm-hmm.
They say something. Drinking martinis, smoking old gold. Seems a lifetime ago. Amazing, after all this long, time stands still when I hear that song. Feel the touch of your hand in a white evening gown. I don't think anyone's ever been so in love.
The lonely moon has lost its glow. Its heart was broken long ago. I lost my love, that's how I know it's true. I get so lonely when I think of you. That's why they call me blue.
All right. We're going to kind of wind things down now, but I want to mention a few things. Number one, you had a cult following when it came to the Shag Crowd, and that's not an easy, that's a really tough group to get into. So you can be really proud of that.
You know, it's funny. I didn't even know there was a Shag Crowd when, you know, I didn't. One day I get a call from, what was his name, Rufus. He had a record store in Myrtle Beach.
Right.
And he was ordering records. And I said, how'd you hear about us? He says, how'd I hear about you? Y'all got four songs on the top 20 down here.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, they're like crazy about your music.
Yeah, Harlem Hit Parade was number one down there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't even know there was a market, I swear. I had no idea.
That's so cool. You can be really proud of that. And the other thing I wanted to say is, before we close, I wanted, you know, we're going to do I Pray For You, because like you said, at times like this, we need that. But is there anything that you wanted to let our audience know that I may have forgotten to ask, or anything we didn't cover that you wanted people to know about?
Oh, gosh. No, they're just going to have to tune in next time. That's all.
Oh, and that means there's going to be a next time. Woohoo!
Sure. No, I'm so happy that, you know, that they're happy.
Oh, so happy.
And that you guys are too.
Yeah, we're forever friends from now on.
Super nice. Yeah, it's wonderful.
And right now, we're going to hear I Pray For You, and we're going to say good night, and God bless you. And thank you for your time. You've been very dear, very kind to us.
Very good. Thanks so much.
All righty. Bye bye.
Bye.
Every day, I else to do.
I'm back. Incredible interview that Angel did with David Foreman, a.k.a. Little Isidore. And there will be a follow-up, which is great. And the interview, for those of you that missed it, will be posted and, you know, I'll put it on Facebook and whatnot. But there's some songs that we didn't get to that, I want to put out there right now. And before I do that, I want to thank David so very much for spending the time with us. We know that he's a very busy man and, just wow, what an incredible artist. And we didn't even really touch on the history behind this musical genius. But let's hear Dootsie-Wa right now. This is why.
my sister Meg, Meg, Meg. Mr. Blue can do the buzz stomping.
And the Inquisitors, Foot Stomping. And before that, Dootsie-Wah. Hey, you are listening to Doo-Wop the way you want it right here on Remember Then Radio, WRTR.net, the soundtrack of our lives and the voice of Street Corner Entertainment. There's one more that I want to play tonight by Little Isidore and the Inquisitors, and that is one of my favorite songs, Peppermint Stick. And when we were offline, David told me he asked Jimmy Jones, who wrote the song, which I didn't know, I learned that tonight. He asked Jimmy Jones about that infamous line that everybody hears, and Jimmy Jones told him he had no clue what he was writing. He was 11 years old at the time. Amazing. Okay, let's hear Little Isidore and the Inquisitors covering Little Butchie Saunders and the L Chords, Peppermint Stick.
Gee, it's Danny, the handsome Kenny. Broom, 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 broom. Some candy.
Oh, 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 what gig we will be tonight. Hey, babies, let me kiss your heart. Do the story go.
Doo-wee-doo, a bom bom bom, bom ba bom bom bom. Some candy.
Candy.
some candy. Bom-be-do-be-do.
All right. Peppermint Stick, Little Luzador, and the Inquisitors. Incredible, incredible, incredible. What can I say? Hey,